This is the Book Club at 91.7. I'm Mark Purcell. 2015 marks the 200th anniversary of the founding of Covington, Kentucky. And that bicentennial is celebrated in the book Gateway City, Covington, Kentucky, 1815 to 2015, that is edited by Paul Tencotti, James Claypool, and David Schroeder. David and Paul are joining me in the studio to talk about this book, looking at 200 years of Covington. Gentlemen, welcome to the Book Club at 91.7.
We're glad to be here.
Thank you.
I'll begin by asking how you two and James got wrapped into writing this book. How did this task fall into your laps?
Well, Jim and I were involved with Dave in a wonderful book called The Encyclopedia of Northern Kentucky. And, it's a great, big, hefty book, 1,100 pages. And we said we enjoyed working together so much, we wanted to repeat the performance. We knew Covington was having an anniversary, and Dave is director of the Kenton County Library, and he kept reminding us that Covington's never had a comprehensive history before. And so I think that gave us enough guilt feelings to go ahead and say, well, if the lady's 200 years old, it's time to celebrate.
Yes. We also had a really good friend named Ron Einhaus, who was pulling us together as a committee to start working on the 200th anniversary. And then unfortunately, Ron passed away before the book could be published or the 200th anniversary. But Ron was kind of the driving force behind the project and really was pushing us to get this book done. And so he was kind of our push to get things moving.
And in the book is dedicated to him.
I was going to say, I noticed that dedication to him right in the beginning. And 200 years for Covington is quite an accomplishment when you see it, all the history that it's been through. When I was reading your book, I was fascinated by all that I did not know about Covington. And I imagine you at the library have access to a lot of that. And I know you have a lot of history under your belt too, Paul. But what was the most challenging when trying to compress this all, these two centuries, into one book?
Well, we didn't do a very good job of compressing, and that is due to my verbosity, as they kept saying. But we really wanted to make certain that this was a community effort. So there were, besides the three of us, 24 other authors involved. And we wanted to do something different. So oftentimes, a community history is done by one or two people. We wanted this to be a community effort, and we wanted to do two things. Number one, we wanted to present in part one a chronological survey of the city, because that had never been done. But the second half, we really wanted to highlight particular topics. So, there are chapters on African Americans, there are chapters on sports and women and literature and art and architecture, religion, immigrants, whatever, so that if you had a particular interest, you wouldn't have to be paging through 450 pages looking at an index and trying to find what interested you in particular.
The other thing that I think was challenging, from my point of view, one of our other goals was to not make it your typical city history, in that it was just, text. So we wanted to be visually appealing as well. And so narrowing down the number of photographs that we could actually use was very challenging, because we have such a rich collection of photographs that we could pull from. And so it's not only a very informative book, it is very visually appealing. And I think there's a lot of photographs in there people will find very interesting.
I noticed in the photographs, I'm glad you brought that up. I know that there were a number credited from the Kenton County Library. I know there were a number of new ones that were taken. But I saw a lot of collection from the collection of Paul Tencotti. My gosh, what kind of photo collection do you have, Paul?
I am an avid collector, and someday soon, as I near retirement, all of those will be heading towards the Kenton County Public Library, as my whole collection is. This whole project, I think, was fun from several standpoints. One is Northern Kentucky really has pulled together in the past 20 or 30 years, and there is less fragmentation than there ever has been, and more of us work together and work together very well. And I think that's a crucial thing when you're trying to pull together a community heritage book like this.
And we were really drawing from not only NKU, where Paul and Jim taught, and Paul still teaches, the library, Barringer Crawford Museum, We were pulling from NKU archives. We were pulling from different groups. The sheriff wrote part of one of the chapters. And so we were really pulling a cross-section of people from throughout, not only Covington, but throughout Northern Kentucky, because so many Northern Kentuckians, particularly Kenton Countyans, have Covington roots. I used to be the local history librarian at the Kenton County Library, and one of the first questions I asked people when they would come in to do genealogy was, were you from Covington or Ludlow? Because those were the two large river cities. The rest of the county was fairly rural until the 1920s. And so Covington has kind of been the center, has been the center of Northern Kentucky for 200 years. And so there's so many resources and so many sources out there that we were able to pull from that really made it fun and interesting, I think.
That's David Schroeder, and also in the studio here is Paul Tencotti. They're talking about Gateway City, Covington, Kentucky, 1815 to 2015, celebrating the bicentennial of that northern Kentucky city. They edited the book along with James Claypool, and if you'd like to learn more about it, you can find out more at our website, wvxu.org. Let's go back to the beginning. In 1815, how did Covington come about? I was fascinated as I read the account to learn how east and west shores of the Licking River were very important back there in the early 19th century.
Absolutely. You know, there's a vast difference, too, between the northern and southern shores of the Ohio. And if we look at Cincinnati as being part of the Northwest Territory, where slavery was prohibited, right? And Kentucky being part of Old Virginia, literally it had been Kentucky County. And all of these very wealthy Virginia planter families wondered, what are they going to give to their second and third sons? Because the first son, you know, according to primogeniture, would get the whole estate. And so they thought, well, we're going to send them out. And most of these land grants that Virginia gave to these soldiers of the Revolution, people were speculating them in right and left. And if you were wealthy, as many of these folks who first settled this area, like Newport and Colonel James Taylor, was, you were speculating in land, and it became very prosperous for you and your families, and you'd send out second and third sons. So what you do see in all of northern Kentucky, since it lay right along the Ohio River and had very fertile land and transportation along the Ohio River, is this becomes the coveted area.
There was a major difference on either side of the river. You point out that Cincinnati and the land there was surveyed in one style, but in using the Virginia style, if you may, in the county of Kentucky, things ended up a little bit different. And that meant some litigious circumstances over a stretch of time when those plots of land were overlapping.
Right? I would like to think that the Northwest Territory was developed due to the failure of the way Covington or the way Kentucky in general was divided. The land ownership, the grants overlapped one another greatly. There were lots of lawsuits going on back and forth that lasted some 50, 60 years, where families were battling over who owned what property. And we had a very difficult time finding out who owned what, when they owned it, and looking at all of these lawsuits that occurred. And so I think that the process in Kentucky perhaps led to a more rational way of dividing up land in the Northwest Territory. So I think our example was not followed, and for good reason.
I didn't realize that Covington had the reputation for being a city of sin and vice, if you may, much like Newport. I mean, you always hear about Newport's,
yes,
you know, kind of a racy past, but I didn't realize Covington was the same way.
Well, you know, it was something typical of 19th century and early 20th century cities, and that's because they did have a large number of immigrants. Those immigrants had to be serviced. They had to have utilities. They had to have jobs available. And so, you know, if you were a corrupt politician or just simply a politician that was on the edge of whether or not they were going to become corrupted, you could look at those immigrant votes and say, gee, what do I want and what do the immigrants want, and let's see if those two can jive. I studied under Zane Miller, who's very well known for his book, Boss Cox of Cincinnati, which was about the Republican machine politics, the Republican corrupt politics, and Boss Cox. And I've always tried to search for how the machine politics, the urban bosses of Covington were connected. In this book, we reveal how that actually happened. Mm-hmm. In Cincinnati, there was a Republican corrupt machine. In Covington, there was a Democratic corrupt machine, but they actually worked together. So when there were elections in Cincinnati, the Republican bosses would call on their Democratic boss friends in Covington and say, can you send over some people to vote in our election, and vice versa. So, and in fact, in 1903, when Covington finally, in an election, cleaned up its politics by electing a Republican reform mayor, you would think that the Republican machine in Cincinnati would have been ecstatic and happy for their Republican counterparts in Covington, but they weren't. they acted like it, but they weren't, because the one was a reform machine and the other in Cincinnati was corrupt. Mm-hmm. So actually, Covington cleans up its government earlier than Cincinnati. That's just one of our firsts.
Yes. I think another thing that we tend to forget, those of us who live on either side of the river, are how similar the urban core in Northern Kentucky is to Cincinnati. You know, the vice that happened on both sides of the river is one example, but immigration is another big example. Mm-hmm. Northern Kentucky, unlike any other part of the state of Kentucky, really was impacted by immigration, particularly in the 19th, early 20th century. So we had the same large numbers of Germans coming to Northern Kentucky as they did in Cincinnati. And so the culture in Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky, particularly in Campbell and Kenton counties, are very similar. And the families that crossed back and forth, you know, if you look at families who ended up in Northern Kentucky, often made their way through over the Rhine or made their way through Cincinnati's West End and came to Northern Kentucky. And so we do have a very similar shared culture that often is overlooked, I think. If you look at our architecture, if you look at our art, if you look at the way our schools were formed, religion, diet, all of those things are very similar across the borders. Even though we oftentimes play up the differences, the similarities are very strong.
That's right. There may be a river betwixt us, but still, yes. We're yes. all in the same boat together.
Yes. Well, and I think, too, we are, I always say, you know, as a, I'm active in the State Library Association, and, you know, it's always startling to me how much more I have in common with Cincinnatians than I do with people who live in southern or eastern or western Kentucky. You know, it's a very, very different culture. And sometimes they look at me as if I have three heads because, you know, I'm coming from this German background that they have no experience in whatsoever. And so we have some, you know, I think Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky have this stepchild, you know, vision. And you know, Northern Kentucky, we feel that we're being neglected by Frankfurt. Cincinnati feels they're being neglected by Columbus. And so we have kind of, you know, joined forces in certain ways. And I think they're seeing more and more of that cooperation, which I think is wonderful.
Well, we're running a little bit shy on time, but I wanted to ask, as I was reading, I reveled in all the wonderful pictures that are there. I reveled in things I knew still existed that I've been by, but I was shocked at how many things have disappeared. I mean, we're talking churches and mm-hmm. school buildings, and you know, the fabric of the communities really changed over these 200 years. But I was curious, as for each of you, what would you like to still have around to see that we don't anymore? I mean, what in your research for your book about the Bicentennial of Covington, did you see and say, boy, I wish I could still go there?
You know, that is no one has ever asked me that question. And so it is, I think, one of the best questions I've been asked, because I used to do a little presentation on lost mm-hmm. places of Cincinnati and Northern Kentucky. And now I see that, you know, if you asked me that question about Cincinnati, I would immediately say the Albee Theater and quite a number of other things. Mm-hmm. I think in Covington, probably something like the Liberty Theater. But even then, I would say that we are fortunate in Cincinnati and in Covington and Newport to have been so prosperous that we have had. Now, all my historic preservationist friends and training are going to go right out the window now, but that we have demolished some things to make certain that we are still a prosperous area. Some bad mistakes were made across the years, for instance, with the Liberty Theater, but I think we are doing a wonderful job of preserving the neighborhoods, both in Cincinnati, Covington, and also in Newport today. And that is something that contributes to the urban renaissance. You know, Cincinnati, Covington, and Newport for years and years tried to be like the suburbs. Right? We brought expressways through them. We tore down old buildings. We put in one-story places. And
industry cars.
Industry, right. And all of a sudden we said, this isn't rebuilding the cities. If you want that, you can go out to the suburbs. What we did say, however, is we have the history, we have the historic fabric, the buildings, we have that river, we have the walkability, which is very important. Mm-hmm. We have the public transportation, which is important. And also we have the openness and the tolerance. And I think the one thing this book tells us is that Covington was a remarkably tolerant and innovative place. Mm-hmm. And I know Dave can speak to this in terms of integration. We never worried in Northern Kentucky about a segregated streetcar system. If you were black or white, whatever you were, you could sit anywhere you wanted on the streetcars. We were integrated. Covington's school system was integrated, fully integrated, earlier than many other places like Cincinnati, and the library itself.
Yeah, the Kenton County Public Library, which was the Covington Public Library when it was started in the early 1900s, was immediately an integrated facility. We believe we are the first library in the southeastern United States that was integrated. So we never had separate facilities for African Americans and whites. So that integration was very, very important. I think Covington also, we have lost some things that I would love to see back. But I think if you look at our buildings and if you look at our neighborhoods, they're remarkably intact. I've given tours of Covington and it amazes me, most of the neighborhoods are still intact. Couple things that I would like to see, the old courthouse.
Mm-hmm. That was one I was thinking of.
You know, you could see right at the end of the suspension bridge, you know, it was a Victorian era, beautiful building. My father worked in it for like 30 years. He was in county government. And so I never, you know, I don't, it was there when I was very young, but I don't remember it. And so that would be something I would love to go through. And I think Newport has done such a wonderful job of maintaining, and Hamilton County of maintaining, and Cincinnati, those historic courthouses. Covington, unfortunately, demolished ours and put up a 10-story monstrosity that really does not fit the community. There's another thing that I would love to have seen was the old St. Joseph Church.
Yes.
Which was at 12th and Greenup Street. It had a very strong German background to it. Thomas More College started in that complex. The Benedictine Sisters, who were active in Covington and still are for the last 150 years. But it was also the home to the Covington Art Institute, which built altars and other furnishings that went throughout the Midwest. So it was a national reputation. Duveneck had his earliest training there, who eventually became the president of the Cincinnati Art Academy. So that whole block, unfortunately, was demolished in the early 1970s. So I would have loved to have seen that before it was demolished.
Well, so much more we could talk about with all the wonderful history and all the wonderful stories in this book, but we have to end things now. But thank you both for being here this morning.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
David Schroeder and Paul Tencotti, who, along with James Claypool, edited the book Gateway City, Covington, Kentucky, 1815 to 2015, marking the bicentennial of that northern Kentucky city this year. You can learn more about it at our website, wvxu.org. You've been listening to The Book Club at 91.7. Technical director is Bruce Ellis. Producer is Kevin Reynolds. Music director and segment engineer is Rick Andres. Web guru is Jim Nolan. And Robin Carey-Allgaier is the announcer. I'm Mark Purcell. Next time, you'll learn about the definitive dictionary of deliberately deceptive language, titled Spinglish. Satirist and semi-bestselling writers Henry Beard and Christopher Cerf will provide a few examples. And Dean Jobe will tell you about Leo Cordes, the man who ran the biggest Ponzi scheme in history and kept it going for almost 20 years. Dean's book is The Empire of Deception. You and I will crack the covers on those books and more next Saturday on the Book Club at 91.7. Stay tuned for Weekend Edition next on 91.7 WVXU.